Christine and I spoke last week. I was really just here for moral support. She did most of the speaking. That was the plan. But we actually went to a different ending, and I'm going to circle back and grab the ending that we were going to go to, but put some other things in there with it. Psalm 23. It's just, most everybody knows it. And unfortunately, it usually just gets read at gravesides of funerals, you know. And it is an incredible, not that it's wasted there, it's used there, it's mighty there, it's powerful. But it's good all the time. And I'm just going to read down and just hear this and let you bank these thoughts for the end of the service. And it'll make sense then, I hope. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. I love this psalm, and I'm sure that you do too. There are many of the psalms, though, they'll start off one way, and at some point during that psalm, a lot of them will hit a low spot. And sometimes they'll stay in a low spot for quite a while, and then they'll pull out of it, and praise will be given to the Lord. And what Christine taught last week was an excellent point about, there was a Psalm 77 that was written by Asaph, and Asaph had access to the king. You remember that? He had access to the king, but he still had problems. And as we rise and as we are elevated in this life, it does not, our elevation in this life does not alleviate us from problems. Every level will have another problem. And then you just got your standard old problems that are always there if you're like me, right? I live with me. I've got problems. But I'm up here standing in front of you telling you things. So if that makes you feel any better. But these psalms are for us. And I love the thing about Asaph is that that psalm was written, it said, to the choir master, which... that actually meant that it was to be said in front of everyone and sang. Psalms were songs, and they were sang in front of everyone, and they were put to music. Christine and I were coming back from a wedding last night around Spartanburg, and as we came back, I was bumping through my Spotify playlist. You'd probably be, Pastor John, you got a Spotify playlist? Oh, yeah, and it's probably better than yours. And she's like, who did this? I said, I did. And I say it's probably better than yours because it's all 80s music, almost all 80s music. And you know, if we're going to say music, you got to say 80s, right? It's just how it is. Sorry, it's not a debate. It's not a debate. It's the truth. I stand before you this morning with truth. Music is the 80s. And as I put that list together and I was playing, I was bumping through different songs, she's like, oh, how could you go past that song, back that song up and play that one? So we played that. We were having a good time coming back from that wedding. Songs are usually meant to be uplifting. And as I told her, I said, you know what amazes me about these songs is that, generally speaking, somebody wrote these songs and someone else put those songs to music. And I'm like, one of the biggest miracles is how they heard that to me. How you heard, somebody heard the words. So somebody had the gifting to write these words out. And very few people have the gifting to do both. It's usually a collaboration of people that'll sit around and listen to the words and then put it to music. Well, they put these psalms to music. And this was to be sung in front of everyone. And it starts off as, Psalm 77 starts as a very rough psalm. I'm talking about like situationally. Asaph is going through it. And he would say this in front of the whole congregation. And I told you before, that gives us permission to talk about the things that we're going through and to bring them to God in front of the congregation. It's really a picture of how we come to church sometimes, and or at least how we should be. And I told you last week, part of my portion, I said this, is that we come in here and like, how are you? I'm good. How are you? I'm good. But sometimes we're not, right? And we should have the freedom to talk about it when we're not good. That way we can grab a brother, we can grab a sister, and we can join together and believe for a thing, right? And sometimes pray together. All those things are wonderful. But I want us to latch on to Psalm 23 as we look at the end of 77 in a minute. When it says, you prepare a table, verse 5, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. That's going to come back at the end and mean something special. But that one right there stumped me for a long time. And I'd study it, and I actually talked to somebody, and then I had somebody that was writing a book about Psalms 23, and they were asking me about it. And it made me dig even harder because I wanted to give them something back to write about Psalms 23, especially that verse right there. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. I'm just going to tell it to you like this. I want to put on my glasses so I can see you and not my notes. I have to. It's a weird thing that I fight through up here, my vision. I want you to know this, though, about your God and about the battles that you face. Number one, there's no battle that you'll ever face that God is wondering, trying to work up a special strategy for this, and like, let's have a board meeting about this. What do you guys think? Do you think that we'll win? That is never the case with God. But sometimes we treat it like that. Sometimes we fret. Y'all know what the word fret is? Christine said something good last week when she was talking about meditation. She said, if you know how to worry, you know how to meditate. You just got to flip it. Well, fretting is one of those things, too, that we will do as we trust God. And as believers, fret shouldn't be in us. And there's even a scripture that says, fret not thyself because of evildoers. That fretting is not a place for us. Amen? It's not a place for us. So in this passage right here, it's saying, you prepare a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. That's one of those scriptures to me that's actually pretty amazing. Now why would God do that? Why would the enemy who's always trying to sneak in and slip in and trip me up, why would God prepare a table in the presence of my enemies? That really has to do with your victory and the enemy's defeat. There are some things that God is going to use as an open display of His power in your life, and the enemy's going to have to sit there and watch it happen. There's some battles that you're going to be able to face and go through. So here's the thing. God is everywhere. Can you say that God is everywhere? Say this. Satan is not. He's not everywhere. We can get that thing backwards. We can think Satan is everywhere, but he is not. God is everywhere. And we need to be clear on that. God is everywhere. Satan is not. But there are certain times that it feels like the enemy's everywhere, and there are also certain times when God will allow the enemy sit there in his presence and see what God will do for you. This table is actually a reference back to the table of showbread. It's also a reference to Psalm 104. I got it right here. I'll flip to it real quick. I didn't give you this, Alan. I got this one by myself. Don't worry, I got it right here. Don't worry about it. Wine that makes the heart of man glad, oil to make his face shine, and bread that strengthens the man's heart. That's a reference to that table. So that table of God, when David was talking about that table, he's talking about there's a table that has wine on it. It has oil on it. It has the things that I need to let me know that God's got me, okay, that God has not forgotten me. But it's also a reference to the showbread, to the table of showbread. There was a table in the temple that everybody in those days knew what it was about. It was a table that would sit there, and the priest would bake fresh bread every day. Hot bread would be put on that table every day. And it would get exchanged out every day because it had to be fresh. But it was called the showbread. And the only ones that had access to that bread was the priest. The priest could actually eat that bread. Now, David was not a priest. And David was in trouble. We will say that David was on the run. He was being pursued, and he and his men were tired, and they were weary, and they show up, and they actually scared the priest. The priest was afraid when David showed up. Like, what does he want? Because David showed up by himself, and David said, "I need some bread. I want some bread." And the priest said, "All I have is the show bread." And David basically said, "That'll do." And took the bread, and he took it, and he ate it, and he fed his men. Do you remember that story? That's one of those stories that you look at and say, what just happened there? I mean, some types of laws were broken along the way. Now, in the New Testament, that story about the showbread and about David coming and taking the showbread and not getting in trouble with God over it, Jesus actually references that story. So Jesus, he's walking with his disciples. His disciples are hungry. So as a follower of God, I want you to know, just because you follow Jesus doesn't mean that you're not going to have hunger pains sometimes. I know that some people preach that if you follow Jesus, it should just be steak and lobster from this point on. There are going to be times when you're going to be hungry looking for something to eat, right? Jesus said, in this life you will have troubles. You will have tribulations. You will have trials. Don't worry about what everybody else says. Worry about what Jesus said. So this was one of those times those disciples were hungry, and they're going through somebody's field of grain, and it's actually a Sabbath day. There's the problem, because you've got all these people looking for a reason to get Jesus on something so we can call him on the carpet. And they said, your disciples, could you imagine them seeing that? They're just walking through a field, and they got hungry, and it says that they're picking the heads of the grain, and they're eating it. That's hungry. How many of y'all remember that cereal called Grape Nuts? That's probably real close to what they were eating right there. No flavor. How they ever sold that? Stale nothingness. And people put it in a bowl, and you call it Grape Nuts that taste like nothing of a grape, except maybe the seeds, the dried out seeds. I'm sorry, I'm off on a big time tangent right there. Come back. So here they are eating that grain, and people are watching that. Like, I don't think they had binoculars in those days, but they had some eagle eyes hiding in cornrows or something, saying, got them. They're eating on a Sunday. They're eating that grain on a Sunday. We're going to go tell on them. And they go tell them. And Jesus said this, you're mad because my disciples ate that? Really? Well, what about David? Y'all ain't mad at David, but what about David when he ate the showbread? That's what he threw back on them. I said that to say this. That table that he has prepared for you, say for me, in the presence of my enemy, which is Satan, I believe that that reference is for us to grasp a hold of. There are certain things that limit us, but do not limit God. He is unlimited. And the enemy has to be reminded of that. There are no limits to what his power is. Not only does the enemy get exposed to that, we are right there in the middle of that. We need to recognize that. That there's a power that God has that is limitless. Do you know what sovereignty means? What does it mean? He answers to no one. God, say that to yourself. He answers to no one. He doesn't ask our permission either. He answers to no one. He is sovereign. So a rule that the religious people would have pounced on and said, but that, he said, no. Go to Psalm 77 then. Because he does something else. At the very end of this chapter, it starts talking about how he parted the seas. He parted the seas. This psalm, as Christine read for us last week, I won't go back through the whole thing, but Asaph is so stressed. He's so overwhelmed. He said, my eyes are open at night. They won't even close. I can't sleep. It's a sleepless night he's having. But at about verse 10, he says, this is my anguish, but I will remember the years of the right hand of the Most High. That means his just hand. That means his mighty hand. That means the strength of God. I'll remember. I've got this bad thing that's happening with me. I am overwhelmed. I am stressed out, but I will look back on what God has done. That's the pattern that we're supposed to have. It's okay to admit there are times of trouble in our lives. Do you know that the Bible says that in the New Testament it says that we go from glory to glory? Doesn't it say that? How do you get from glory to glory? Through suffering. Otherwise it would be indistinguishable. He would have just said that from this point on, it's all glory. That's heaven, folks. We're still in life down here. But in this life, we go from glory to glory. That means the only way to tell a glory from a glory is trouble in between. And that trouble in between is when we hearken back to what God has already done. And that's a pattern that these people knew. It's a pattern that the Israelites knew. And he gave them that great instruction to always remember what I did, Israel, when I brought you out of Egypt, when I brought you out of suffering, when I brought you out of the bondage of sin. That's the instruction he told them. And he said to do this. He said, talk about it to your children. Gather your family around. Talk about it to your children when they wake up, when they go about their day, when they go on a journey, and when they lay down. Now tell me where there's any gaps in that. Tell me there are no gaps in that. He said, let it always be on your lips what I have already done. So that they understood that as a tremendous blessing, as a tremendous rescue of God. Because when the Israelites came out of Egypt, you remember, Pharaoh was on them. He was chasing them. He was in pursuit. He wanted to either kill them or destroy them or bring them back into slavery. They got to the Red Sea. There was a sea in front of them. There was a mountain surrounding them, and the enemy was in hot pursuit of them. There was no way out, and God opened up the seas. They walked through on dry ground. And they saw the enemy chase and pursue them, and then the walls of the water closed in on them and killed every one of them. You remember that story? And God said, remember that. Remember that. So I told you a second ago, it's a limitless God. He answers to no one. His power is more than we could ever imagine. Even nature obeys him. You won't see that repeated anywhere. You won't see the waters part back and dry ground appear. You won't see that again. But it did happen. There's proof that happened. We won't go into that. But that place of maturity in our life is how quickly we hearken back to what he's already done. So with that reference, I want to say this. There's times when people feel surrounded by the enemy. It happened with Elijah. It happened with one of his servants, the man who followed Elijah, the man who had seen miracles from Elijah, miraculous miracles from Elijah. He looked around and saw that they were surrounded by the enemy. And he said, what are we going to do? And he said, look again. And he prayed for his servant. He said, open his eyes. Open his eyes that he will see. And when he opened his eyes, he said, Elijah said, what do you see? What do you see now? He said, those who are for us are greater than those who are against us. You got to get that inside of you. Because we all get to the place of being overwhelmed, don't we? I do. I still do. I'm your pastor. I'm telling you, sometimes I get overwhelmed. I have to hearken back. The same rule fits for me that it fits for you. I have to hearken back. But what has God done in my life? It's a great thing. And then it starts feeling like things are focusing in, are surrounding me. Like doom is impending. Has anybody ever felt like that? Doom is impending. Let me break it down to a different way. You ever felt like you were going to lose your job? Husbands, you ever felt like, how am I going to provide for my family, my children? If I lose my job, Doug, you're about to retire. Is it how many days?
I have retired.
You have retired for how many days?
2 weeks.
So he counted it down. I'd see, he'd tell me 38 days, 12 days. So he's there now. Were there ever a time in your life, Doug, in your career, that you felt like I might lose my job? Okay. But you didn't lose it, and you just retired. And now you're going to enjoy that. Pray that he enjoys that. He worked for that. Hey, let's celebrate with him for that. Shouldn't we? Shouldn't we just? That's awesome. Michael W. Smith was a big name in the Christian music industry. Probably still is. I think you know who I'm talking about. He wrote a song. I think he wrote it. It's Surrounded. And he gave reference to that place in Elijah. Where he drew the inspiration was when Elijah, they were surrounded, and his servant said, Elijah, we're surrounded, and prayed for him. The story I just told, prayed for him that he would see with spiritual eyes. He said, look again, and what do you see? He said, I see that those who are for us are greater than those who are. He saw past. He saw past what was his presence around. But there was another person who got a hold of that song, and they wrote some other verses to go with it. And I remember that. Christine, will you come? Talking about being surrounded. The first time we ever sang that song, it may look like I'm surrounded, but I'm surrounded by you. Do y'all remember that song? It may look like I'm surrounded, but I'm surrounded by you. You remember that? And then we start singing this. What would we sing? This is how I fight my battles. This is how I fight my battles. This is how it may look like I'm surrounded, but I'm. And it was great because we were getting our eyes focused on God, but all we heard was the chorus. That's all we had ever heard was the chorus. And we got home one day and we're talking about that song. It's like, what is the how? This is how I fight my battles. It may look like I'm surrounded. I'm surrounded by you. Okay, there's that. This is how I fight my battles. What? What is the how? We're missing something. And we got to investigate and found out somebody wrote some verses for that. And that's where the how was at. And this is some of my stuff is missing. Where's got my phone? You got. All right, say what it says in the verses. There's a table that's been prepared for me in the presence of my enemies. It's your body and your blood that was shed for me. This is how I fight my battles. It may look like I'm surrounded, but I'm surrounded by. See, sometimes, even though it sounds good, even though it feels good, we don't have the complete picture of it. But when we get the complete picture of it, then we can celebrate. And that's something you can take home with you. That's what I want you to know this morning. Church should be a whole lot more than us coming together and singing and maybe getting inspired by what some preacher says to us. We can take this thing home with us and unpack it all week long and play it again against the enemy. And then it says there's another. If that wasn't enough, there's another verse that says, in the valley. How many of you have ever had valleys? I know that you're with me, and surely your goodness and your mercy will follow me. See, that's the last part of Psalm 23. However I walk, however fast I walk, however slow I walk, goodness and mercy are right there beside me. I won't outwalk them. I won't outrun them. And if I fall back there, they're going to catch me. Goodness and mercy are always walking with me. In the valley, I know you're with me. Surely your goodness and your mercy follow me. This is how. So my weapons are praise and thanksgiving. So when we come together and when we sing, and when we offer a praise to the Lord, you need to look at that more than just your voice. Because you might have a beautiful voice, or you might have a voice that's not so beautiful. It's beautiful to God. You know what that's called? That's called a joyful noise. Joyful noise. That's what we called our children's choir way, way, way back in the day. Them kids couldn't sing, but they turned it out because it was y'all's babies up there singing. And it didn't matter how bad it was. They were singing for the Lord, and everybody was right there with them. And we called, is the best children's choir name I've ever heard in my life. We called them Joyful Noise because we was telling the truth. They weren't our little singers. They were a joyful noise. But that's what our praise is. So however well you can sing, and if you can't hold a tune in a bucket, you can sing praises to God, because anything you turn to God becomes a weapon. Do you see that? Any praise you give to God becomes a weapon, and you use that against the enemy. Whatever valley that you're facing, whatever thing that you're walking through, can I promise you, you're going to walk through another one? But there's a glory on the other side that you're going to. He's going to get you from glory to glory. He did not say that we will go from glory, just good luck with that. So let's take that look off of our face that I'm in good luck mode with God. No, you're not. You're on your way to glory with Him. Look at your neighbor and tell him, I'm on my way to glory in God. Hallelujah. Will you stand with me this morning? Christine, will you lead us in that? I don't know where you're at this morning. I don't know if you're at a high point of glory. I don't know if you're in the valley. I don't know if you're on your way down or you're on your way up, but you're somewhere in there. And this song is always for you, no matter where you're at.